It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Some business and economic hors d'oeuvres before you're off to the main event. From APM, I'm Jeremy Hobson, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update for Thanksgiving, November 22nd, 2012. Well, coming up, new proposed rules for the Affordable Care Act, a proposed budget for the European Union, and some speed bumps to expect on your way to the turkey dinner. It's all coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Well, just in time for the holiday weekend, the government has offered up some proposed rules for the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And the rules could mean it would still be difficult for people with pre-existing conditions to get coverage. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Dan Gorenstein reports.
Want to impress your Thanksgiving guests with a bit of healthcare trivia?
The sickest 10% of the population accounts for half of total healthcare spending.
Karen Politz is a senior fellow at the Kaiser Family Foundation. Right now, insurance companies can restrict really sick people's access to coverage. But under Obamacare, the most egregious forms of so-called cherry-picking, denying people for pre-existing conditions, for example, are outlawed. Politz says these proposed rules still permit the cherry-picking, just in less overt ways.
It'll become kind of like a game of whack-a-mole.
Politz wants Washington to force insurers to offer all but identical plans and beef up oversight.
I think this is really stretching it.
Robert Leshefsky is with Health Policy and Strategy Associates.
We've written a 2,800-page law here, hundreds of pages having to do with insurance reform. It's all written by the Obama administration.
The insurance business likes the flexibility in the proposed rules. An industry spokesperson warns the more plans look alike, the more expensive they'll be. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Japan's stock market is at a 6.5-month high, and that's in part thanks to expectations that Japan's version of the Federal Reserve is about to get aggressive, or you might say, go negative, as in set negative interest rates to get investors to stop putting their money into government bonds. Here to explain is Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, so if I went looking for negative interest rates right now in practice, where would I go? Where would I find them?
Well, you can find them here in the U.S. if you go and buy Treasury inflation-protected securities. These are the U.S. Treasuries that protect you from an increase in the consumer price index. Well, you're getting paid a negative yield to own those because you're so worried about inflation down the road. Go to Denmark. The Danish Central Bank has a policy of paying a negative interest rate. State Street Corp. And Bank of New York Mellon, they have imposed on their institutional investors, if they want to hold Danish kroner, Swiss franc, well, they're getting a negative real rate of interest on that. So it's pretty much around the world.
Why would anybody go in on a deal like that? You're basically saying, here, bank, take my money, or here, government, take my money, and I'm going to pay you to do that.
Right. It seems like the definition of irrationality, or economic irrationality, right? Well, what it is, it reflects the fear of what's happening in Europe and the fiscal cliff and, you know, all the economic problems that we've had over the past 5 years. They're not over with yet. You know, what's really going to happen to Greece? What about Spain? What about Italy? So it's a flight to safety. And in order to preserve their cash, people are willing to take a negative real rate of interest.
Now, of course, it's a good deal for whoever is getting paid to keep your money. But I gather also governments, for example, like it when things like this happen because they can use it as a tool to push people into the stock market.
Oh, that's absolutely right. Now, central bankers normally, you know, if we were having this conversation 20 years ago, this wouldn't even be on the radar screen. But now they're kind of intrigued. Just as you're saying, okay, if there's a negative rate of interest, boy, banks, you know, they're going to start lending more. And individuals will take more risk with their money because who wants a negative rate of interest? So it's part of this whole process with QE1, QE2, QE3 that's been going on around the world. It's not just here in the U.S. by central bankers to try and get people to take more risks, for banks to lend more, to get demand growing, to get the economy growing.
Yet it seems like it hasn't been quite enough yet, right, to get people to take the kind of risk that many would like them to take.
Well, how confident are you feeling right now with negotiations going on in Washington over the fiscal cliff and taking a look at the, you know, the latest news from Europe and what's happening in the Middle East? So right now, people want safety.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks so much and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
And while leaders in markets here at home are kicking back and relaxing today, European Union leaders are gathering in Brussels to hammer out a budget for the EU. The task will not be easy, with the continent trying desperately to claw its way out of debt. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us now from London with more on that. Good morning.
Hello, Jeremy.
Well, Stephen, let's start with the basics. What exactly is the EU budget? Who pays for it and what does it do?
This is the money provided by the member states that the EU spends on things like farm subsidies, on building roads and bridges in some of the poorer member states, and on bureaucrats in Brussels. We're talking about $1.25 trillion over a 7-year period, about 1% of the EU's GDP. Not in national terms, a huge amount of money.
And explain why the talks are so tricky right now in Brussels.
Well, because you've got 27 different countries with different agenda. And broadly, you've got a split between the countries that get more out of the budget than they put in and those that are big net contributors. Poland, for example, gets $17 billion a year out of the EU. Poland wants the budget to go up. Not surprisingly, Britain, on the other hand, pays in about $11 billion, and it wants at least a freeze in the budget. UK Prime Minister David Cameron, speaking in Brussels today, said a freeze is only fair in these tough times.
Clearly, at a time when we're making difficult decisions at home over public spending, it'd be quite wrong, it is quite wrong, for there to be proposals for this increased extra spending in the EU.
And Cameron has threatened to veto the budget if he doesn't get his way.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Jeremy.
And speaking of the European Union, one question for the ages has finally been answered. Just how many bottles of wine are stocked in the official government wine cellars? The answer is 42,789. Although, according to the New York Times, the most expensive bottle is just $60, if that makes you feel any better.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Tomorrow traditionally begins the dramatic start to the holiday shopping season, but why wait till Black Friday when you can shop today in many places? To find out if consumers are really ready to spend, let's get to Attitude Check, our weekly partnership with the polling firm Gallup.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Frank Newport is editor-in-chief at Gallup, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So are Americans in a spending mood this holiday season?
Well, a modest spending mood. How's that? Our calculations here at Gallup, I'll be specific with you, show that the average American is going to spend $770 on holiday presents this Christmas season. That's virtually the same as last year. And when you do the math, that argues for a slight or a modest increase in spending, holiday Christmas spending this year, of about 3.5%, 3.7%, according to our estimates. And actually, that's about what the National Retail Federation predicts, about 4%, and Deloitte did some calculations, about 3.5 to 4% increase. So everybody's calculating a modest but not exuberant increase in spending this year.
Well, before we spend, we have to eat, of course, some turkey, some stuffing, all the rest of it. And it sounds like you've got a little polling data on that issue as well.
Oh, indeed. We asked this several different ways, and there's some interesting paradoxes here. First of all, the majority of Americans would like to lose weight, particularly women. 62%, I'll put some numbers to it, of women across this great land of ours say they would like to lose weight, 45% of men. However, at this point, only a quarter of Americans, 25%, say they're seriously trying to lose weight. That's 33% of women, 16% of men. So we would like to lose weight, yet many's the slip between cup and lip. Not all that many of us are actually trying to.
Well, it's a little harder to try than to want to. But, Frank, does that look different to you than in years past? Do you have data going back on this issue?
We do have data that goes back quite a ways on that. And actually, the big change came in the 50s. Believe it or not, Gallup was asking these questions about would you like to lose weight back in the 1950s. And then the percent who said yes was very low, relatively low. It was down well below half in the 40% range. Now, I'm not sure that means Americans were thinner back then. What it probably means sociologically is back in the 50s, Americans didn't worry that much about it. And now, for cosmetic reasons and health reasons, we're bombarded, of course, with this information that you got to lose weight, you got to be thin. So I think we're more concerned about it than we were low those many years ago when Ike was in the White House.
And before there was stuffed crust pizza.
Well, that's true. Maybe what we eat has changed, although I think we have, you know, a lot more healthy alternatives now than we did back in the 50s, I think.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup. Thanks as always, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. My pleasure.
Well, now to a number, 43.6 million. That's how many Americans are expected to travel 50 miles or more this holiday weekend. And 250,000, there's another number, and that is the estimate from the National Automobile Dealers Association of how many cars may have been damaged or destroyed by Hurricane Sandy. A lot of the owners of those vehicles have turned to rental cars to get around, and as Alex Goldmark reports from our Transportation Nation project at WNYC, that has caused a shortage.
Many rental branches in New York have long waiting lists. Some are closed because they just don't have cars. Paula Rivera is a spokesperson for Hertz. Her company is honoring existing reservations, but
for those who haven't made reservations, the availability is extremely tight at this point in time. So the probability of securing a car for travel over Thanksgiving weekend is slim.
She suggests taking public transit to a nearby city and renting a car there. Meanwhile, to meet demand, companies are driving in tens of thousands of extra vehicles. There's a problem, though, according to Paul Eisenstein. He's an auto industry expert at the Detroit Bureau, and he says rental car companies just don't have extra cars.
I mean, they're not in business to keep vehicles around just in case there's a hurricane. That's just bad business.
The replacement cars are coming from as far away as Colorado, so expect the waiting lists for New York rental cars to outlast your Thanksgiving food coma. In New York, I'm Alex Goldmark for Marketplace.
And if you manage to get behind the wheel this weekend, beware of yellow traffic lights. Some cities are being accused of making those lights even shorter than usual to get more money out of red light cameras. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
So you're driving over to grandmother's house when, bam, you hit a yellow light. Before you know it, the lights turn red and you've gotten a ticket. The National Motorists Association says cities are trimming the timing on yellow lights, so they skip right to red. John Bowman is the association spokesman.
It's a rigged system, and they're doing it to increase their camera revenues.
Bowman says, for example, all of Chicago's yellow lights last 3 seconds, even where traffic is going more than 40 miles an hour. Bowman says the city earns more than $70 million a year from red light cameras, but state and local governments say the camera's primary purpose is traffic safety. Jonathan Adkins is with the Governor's Highway Safety Association.
The notion by some that there's some sort of devious conspiracy when communities put cameras into place really isn't true.
There is no federal referee in this debate. Local governments decide how long their yellow lights should be. The Federal Highway Administration only issues guidelines that they should last 3 to 6 seconds. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally to the turkey, which apparently has an amazing ability to gobble on cue. The Atlantic dug up this 1973 recording of a guy named Jim Nolman singing with hundreds of wild male turkeys.
Where will that wedding breakfast be? Uh-huh. Where will that wedding breakfast be? Uh-huh. Where will that wedding breakfast be? Way down yonder in a big hollow tree. Uh-huh.
Nolman says the trick is sharing musical energy with the birds without aggravating them, which he says did happen once. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. That's the Marketplace Midday Update. Happy Thanksgiving.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.